Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And remember, we're talking politics every day at this time until the New York primary on September 14th. Bookmark this slot, political junkies, or if you're just coming back from your summer vacations, whatever, and getting your mind around the politics and the coming election. Today, the embattled and highly controversial New York State Senate Majority Leader Pedro Espada of the Northwest Bronx, an area mostly east of Broadway and south of Van Cortlandt Park, is the 33rd State Senate District, and his main challenger, Gustavo Rivera. We also invited the third candidate in the race, Dan Paternock, but he did not respond to several invitations to appear. Mr. Rivera is giving us a few minutes, and then we'll have Mr. Espada. Gustavo Rivera, thank you very much for coming on WNYC.
No, it's a pleasure to be here, my friend.
So why do you hope voters will oust their incumbent senator and majority leader, Mr. Espada?
Well, I think that there is I hope that they push him out because they have an understanding. I mean, I've been talking to my neighbors for the last couple of months as I've been knocking on doors, talking to people in the street. There is an understanding that the needs of this district are not being addressed. At the end of the day, I do not think that this is about Espada or about me. It is about the needs of the people of the 33rd District and the fact that we have been failed, that Mr. Espada has failed in what he is supposed to do in Albany.
Well, Mr. Espada says every chance he gets that he's working for the people in his district and Latino empowerment, and everything else is political payback. He argues that he helped lead the passage of the Rockefeller drug laws, housing reforms. He'll mention other things. And he argues that activist groups like the Working Families Party and Bill Samuels' group spending $250,000 against him are what he calls limousine liberals from outside the district. What do you say to that?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's funny that he calls me an outsider when he doesn't even live in the Bronx. That's the first thing. I've been living
He allegedly has his primary residence in a house in Westchester.
Yes, correct. Now, I live in a rent-stabilized apartment in the middle of the district in the Kingsbridge Heights section, and I've been living there for about 10 years. And as far as him being a part of, reforming Rockefeller drug law reform, that was not him that led it. That was folks like Eric Schneiderman and Liz Krueger in the Senate. As far as him and in the issue of Latino empowerment, he calls himself majority leader, and he has that title, but this is not something that we should be proud of. There's a lot of things that bother me about Mr. Espada. He is an embarrassment to the party. He is an embarrassment to the Bronx and to the body that he serves in. But particularly, one thing that particularly upsets me is the fact that he calls himself the highest-ranking Latino in the state, as if though we should be proud of him. We should not be. And this is I'm talking about particularly Latinos. And the thing is this. The people that I have been speaking to, the voters in this district, my neighbors that I have been speaking to every single day for the last couple of months, they have a recognition of that. So he can definitely go on, you know, he can say that there's outsiders that are attacking him. On 14th of September, just 11 days away, it's going to be the voters, it's going to be my neighbors who recognize that they've been ill-served by this man and disrespected by him, who are going to vote him off. And hopefully they will give me the opportunity to represent them.
And he gets a lot of heat for having jumped to support the Republican Party Senate leadership temporarily last year. But he says the Democrats weren't doing enough for his district. And on the question of Latino and neighborhood empowerment, he says playing one off the other is good for the area in the classic tradition of political bargaining. Do you disagree?
I strongly disagree. I mean, political bargaining is one thing. When you're talking about somebody who held the state up for a month, and eventually got a if people remember the timeline of this, and I used to work in the state Senate when we were still in the minority. I worked in the Democratic Conference, and I worked extremely hard to make sure that we would get into the majority. And I remember it vividly because there were some folks that I still know from staff members in the Senate who were in the room when it was happening, and they were sending me messages like, this thing is happening, and I was like flabbergasted like the rest of the folks. When you look at the timeline, timeline of this, and you figure out when he actually flipped back to the flipped back to the Democratic conference, it was when it became clearer to him. This is after a judge had found that the appointment of the lieutenant governor, Richard Ravitch. Remember that there was, you know, when Spitzer left, Spatterson became governor. There was no lieutenant governor. He appointed Richard Ravitch, and then the court found that was an appointment that stuck. When it became clearer to him that he might no longer have the ability to be able to hold the state hostage to get whatever he wanted, that's when he started to flip back to the Democrats. So this is not somebody who has demonstrated an ability to negotiate to be able to get good legislation passed. This is not someone who has demonstrated that he can negotiate to do better for his community. This is somebody who has demonstrated that he will do what he needs to do to get his political point across, to be able to gain power for himself. It is not, and there is a recognition of that. That's the one thing that I want to make sure that I underline. This is not about outsiders. These are about the people in this district have a recognition that we have not been well served by this man. And I talk to folks every single day who tell me this.
Talk about yourself as an alternative to Mr. Espada. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are endorsing, you know, anyone but Pedro Espada, basically, as their number one priority. But tell us about yourself. What have you done in your career that you are most proud of?
There are many things that I've been proud of. Let me see. I came to New York 12 years ago. I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I was born and raised down there. Been in New York for 10 years, and during that time, I've been both an educator. I taught for 3 years at Hunter College as a graduate teaching fellow, and I've taught for 6 years at Pace University as a part-time faculty member in the political science department there. But I've also, during that time, worked for both for elected officials, both in government and in campaigns. I've done elections from the local level all the way to the national. I was one of the state directors for Obama in Florida in 2008. I played an important role in making sure that the Democratic conference would flip over to majority. And I just left recently a position with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, where I was her director of outreach for about a year. But the core of this is that I've always been involved. I mean, I tell my students all the time, there's a political scientist in the 1930s. His name was Harold Laswell. And he defined politics as who gets what, when, and how. So as I tell my students all the time, what happens in the political process matters because resources are limited, and we have to have the people that are there to decide who gets what, when, and how, where the resources go, what communities are impacted, is extremely important. So I've always believed in my career, I've always been committed to public service because I believe that the people, if we have the right type of people in government, they will have a positive impact on policy, which will have a positive impact on the communities that I care about. Mm-hmm. And so that is the reason why I felt compelled to run, because when he did this last year, he demonstrated that without a doubt, we're talking about one action, but we look at his entire record, and I think that it's demonstrated that at the basic level he is self-serving. He does not serve the community that he's supposed to represent. He's simply forgotten who he works for.
Gustavo Rivera running against Pedro Espada in that Northwest Bronx State Senate primary on September 14th in New York. We'll hear from Senator Espada next. Do you have a first bill that you would like to introduce or some top priorities that you think your neighborhood, your district needs from Albany that it's not getting?
I think that there's a lot of them. We have the district that I live in. It has a median income of about $24,000 a year. We have about one in three of my neighbors believe that if the prices of their rent goes up too much, they might become homeless. There's around 72,000 units of affordable housing, of rent-stabilized apartments. I live in one of them myself. We have more healthcare, more hospitals in the district than any other, probably in the entire city, in the entire state probably. We have Montefiore, Bronx, Lebanon, North Bronx, St. Barnabas, the Veterans Hospital. So all of these are right there in the district. I think the main, so all of these things are kind of interconnected. I think economic development and job creation has to be the number one priority. We have something like 13% unemployment rate in this part of the Bronx. But all of those things, whether it's jobs or job creation, housing, defending affordability, affordable housing and tenants' rights, in education, making sure that we get the money from the CFE lawsuit that is due to us so that we can build the schools to address overcrowding. All of these things, I think, are also encompassed in the idea that we need to reform government. And we need to reform state government in a way that it makes it more transparent, makes it more accountable, and that people can actually trust state government again. So in a very small nutshell, that is what we're talking about.
And I know you have to go in a minute. What more can Albany do to create jobs?
I think that we need to, there's a lot of things that we can do to create jobs. The number one thing that I would do, particularly considering that my district, as I said before, has plenty of healthcare workers in it, whether it's nurses, healthcare, people that work in hospitals, home health aides, and also there's, and also education, teachers, and others that work in schools. These are some of the main jobs that exist in my district. I think that the first thing that we need to do is be smarter about the budget process in its entirety, so that we do not cut funding that has a direct impact on not only the services that are being provided, but the jobs that are the people that are working in these institutions. We also need to be create more opportunities at the state level for MWBEs, for minority women-owned businesses. The fact is that we need smart growth. We need economic development that is green, that actually teaches people how to. It's a long conversation, but I think that, that those are some of the things that we can do to start going in the right direction.
Last thing, which I'm asking all the legislative candidates, the legislature last year, really earlier this year, raised taxes on clothing under $110 to help close the budget gap, but declined to raise taxes on sugary drinks. Do you think that was backwards?
I think that both of those are regressive taxes. I believe that we need to embrace a more progressive taxation system. I think that there's certain things that we need to do at the revenue side of the equation when it comes to the budget before we get to the cuts. But in the case of sugary drinks, the evidence that I've seen tells me that it would have a positive, it would have an impact on consumption, which would in turn have an impact on caloric intake, which would have positive health care, positive health effects in the people in my district. And I have a lot of my neighbors have. I had a problem with controlling my weight over the years, so I definitely have understand what it is to deal with health issues as far as obesity, diabetes. I have family members who are diabetic, so I think that there's certain things that that would have had a positive health care impact, and I would have supported it. But again, when it comes to the budget process, on the revenue side of the equation, we need to look at some taxing the wealthier at a higher rate. I think that we need to look at stock transfer taxes as well before we get to talking about regressive forms of taxation or cutting funding that would have a direct impact on services.
Gustavo Rivera, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me with you.
Now the incumbent in the 33rd District Democratic primary, he is State Senate Majority Leader Pedro Espada. We generally hear about Senator Espada in the context of statewide politics, but remember this is a primary election in his district, which includes Kingsbridge, University Heights, Norwood, East Tremont, Bedford Park, a little bit of Riverdale, for the most part due south of Van Cortlandt Park. He's a freshman in that district, despite his long career having represented a different Bronx district in the past. Senator, welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, Brian, thank you. Good morning.
At least in terms of the media and political establishments, this race is becoming you against the world. The Daily News just endorsed your opponent, Mr. Rivera, saying, among all the bums who must be thrown out, Espada should be first, unquote. El Diario just endorsed your opponent, saying it's time to end the politics of me in favor of the politics of we. And you only have the endorsement of one elected official, Senator Ruben Diaz Sr. Should voters see all of this as you alienating almost everyone you work with?
I have the endorsement of La Voz, which is a 35-year-old weekly newspaper, very important vehicle for new immigrants to get information. I have the endorsement of the New York Al Día, again, a daily Spanish-language newspaper. I have the support of the clergy and the community of faith, not only in my district, but throughout the city. The faith community has coalesced with myself. And yes, Senator Diaz, who I work day in and day out with, I have the support of the conference leader, John Sampson, Senator Sampson, and many others. It shouldn't surprise anyone that mainstream media, and particularly those that you noted who have never really interviewed me for any editorial endorsement, would have that kind of opinion. It sells newspapers, and it furthers the negative image that they confer upon people in my community as well.
When you say in your community, I know you've often said that you're bringing Latino empowerment to Albany, but does the El Diario endorsement of Rivera sting, therefore?
There is no sting in our campaign. There's a tremendous pride in our campaign. We are emphasizing the positive in our campaign. Our opponents have no platform other than to throw mud and to really give the community no platform to build on. Mine is a campaign that features our good work over 2 years, ending the Rockefeller drug laws, championing housing issues, having a rent freeze bill that I hope will come to a full vote, advocating on behalf of farm workers, domestic workers, those workers that have been abused and needed protections, and really dealing with the budget crisis, erasing a $9 billion deficit without having increased taxes or involved in borrowing. So we're going to the substance of our work and what the community needs, and the community is hearing that loud and clear.
What about your Senate colleagues? I only knew about Senator Diaz, you say also Senator Sampson. That still leaves about the other 30 Democratic senators not endorsing you, and you're the majority leader. How have you alienated all of them?
There's been no alienation. There's been a tremendous amount of teamwork. 32 votes were needed to pass a budget. 32 votes were needed to have domestic workers gain their rights. 32 votes were needed for my historic involvement in building up affordable housing, not just in New York City, but throughout the state. 32 votes were needed to protect our children against the MetroCard being taken away. And 32 votes were needed to have an investment in education. And so never mind the politics of the season, the substance of it speaks for itself. We have a record. My opponent has zero record.
Well, they're voting. They voted for all those bills, but now they're endorsing Rivera.
The idea that somehow the politics merits and supersedes the substance of what we're talking about is of no interest to me. I didn't get elected with the support of anybody other than the people of the 33rd, and that's what's going to return me back to Albany for continued service as a leader in my community, as a senator, one of 62. It's with great pride that I look forward to doing that in January 2011.
You're running in a Democratic primary. Last summer, you jumped ship by throwing your support to the Republican leadership for control of the Senate. Only when that bid failed did you come back to the Democrats. What should Democratic Party primary voters think about someone who is willing to give away power to the other side?
They should know the truth, and they know the truth. The truth is that Republicans joined me, and for 31 days I sat in my chair. I waited to deliberate on legislation. And 31 days later, the Democrats offered me the majority leadership position. And that is a historic first for our community, the first Hispanic majority leader from the Bronx, and it's given us tremendous opportunity. The Bronx district that I represent is amongst the poorest, and so when you visit all the prior majority leaders, you see what has been done in their communities, whether it's stadia, whether it's economic development opportunities. The Bronx waited. The Bronx finally has a voice with influence and power, and millionaire outsiders will absolutely not take that away.
But Republicans wanted to keep the Rockefeller drug laws. Republicans want lower taxes on the rich and fewer services for the poor. Republicans think New York City schools get too much state funding compared to suburban schools. Considering those things, how could you have supported Republican leadership and see it in the interest of your constituents?
This was nothing about Republicans and Democrats. This was bipartisanship. This was a reform of the Senate. My move to restore the bipartisanship, when every editorial board called for bipartisanship and the end of gridlock, I stepped forward. And I understood that breaking the mold and moving away from politics as usual would bring me some consequences, and they have. But the fact of the matter is that in my district and throughout this state, there are many communities of color that understand that we get to select our leaders, and millionaire outsiders don't dictate, and Republican, Democrat registrations don't determine our point of view. Where our point of view is derived from and our plan of action is derived from is the needs of our community for housing, quality job, educational opportunities, and, yes, a historic first to be at the table of power so that we can influence our own change.
Senate Majority Leader Pedro Espada, running in his Democratic primary for the seat in the Bronx that he represents, my guest on WNYC as we continue to talk politics in this time slot every day through the New York primary on September 14th. You also stand accused by State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo of looting $14 million from your Soundview Health Clinics chain, you and your aides and relatives, and using the money for use of a Mercedes-Benz, vacationing in Las Vegas, $100,000 for your political campaigns, and $20,000 worth of sushi, which makes these stories all the time. That case is not proven as of now, but should voters see it as a sign that you're of questionable character?
That particular civil lawsuit will never be proven because it has no basis. Andrew Cuomo knew that would never come to a civil court in the Bronx on his clock as Attorney General. Andrew Cuomo, encouraged by all the editorial boards throughout the state to come get Espada, to do damage to a 30-year organization that has for many, many years delivered quality, affordable health care to people in the South Bronx, invading it, demonizing it, vilifying it, and it still stands today as a model for affordable health care to poor working-class communities. That's our record. That's what we've done. I was a CEO since age 23, founding these medical centers, the Amadou Diallo Medical Center. Throughout the Bronx, people know, day in and day out, hundreds of thousands of visits per year, quality jobs. They know what Soundview stands for. It doesn't stand for this kind of nonsense. Paper will tolerate anything. And so I look forward to the day when we can actually take this to court. But unfortunately, it was never meant to go to court. It was meant to tarnish me, and that hasn't worked. I'm here in a very competitive race. My message is getting across, and the voters of the 33rd are going to send a loud message that they get to pick their leaders and that they are not going to be swayed by this kind of dirty politics.
I think I've heard you in the past acknowledge that $20,000 sushi bill. That's on the tab of a series of health clinics for poor people?
You know, this is utter nonsense. I think, when you look at your own radio program and you look at your executives and you look at their benefit packages of other healthcare executives, this has nothing to do with reality. And all of this, whether it's sushi, whether it's a $14 million myth and fiction, all of it will be dealt with in a court of law. I look forward to that. But right now, we're dealing with a 30-year track record of providing quality health care, and no one should try to destroy that. And that's what has happened here, to destroy institutions that provide needed quality care, and to tarnish them is itself the biggest crime here.
As you've mentioned housing several times, the Bronx News Network referred to this yesterday. They said you have an enormous campaign war chest bankrolled mostly by the real estate industry. So what should the mostly low and moderate income renters in your district think about whose side you're on in housing?
They should think about my rent freeze bill, which would not use a nickel, a penny, a dime of taxpayer dollars, and would give a rent freeze to 600,000 households throughout New York City. These are people that are losing their apartments because they can't afford it. And my legislation to provide rent protections over 7 years, to extend those rent protections to rent-stabilized units throughout the city. And the fact that this housing chairperson did more bond financing out of my committee than any other housing chairperson in 40 years in the legislature. We have a historic opportunity that we seized upon to bring affordable housing opportunities and preserve affordable housing, and we've done that. And it's a stellar record of accomplishment that I want to continue in January.
What does the real estate industry get for their campaign donations to you?
They get absolutely nothing. They get someone that will deal with landlord abuses when they have to be dealt with, and they get the same opportunity that anybody should have in our democracy, and that is to have everybody's ear. I had a public hearing where we invited tenants, landlords, and everyone else. You know, the day has come where we have to have a balanced conversation about what policies we're going to set forth in the housing area and in many other areas, because, you know, we're at a point in time where you could play political games and get nowhere, or you could deal with substance and really good policy and actually uplift our economy and uplift the daily lives of people. That's what I'm about. I'm not going to pander to any side other than the side of reason and good judgment and sound policy.
You have not signed, and Mr. Rivera has, former Mayor Koch's pledge to reform Albany through three specific measures: non-political redistricting, generally accepted accounting principles for the state budget, and certain principles of campaign finance reform. Does that indicate that you are, as Koch puts it, an enemy of reform?
Well, you're not often wrong, Brian, but you are wrong on that note. I was among the first five to sign on to that, and I didn't need Mayor Koch to encourage me. I signed on long ago to issues of redistricting and having to take that out of the hands of the legislature, to dealing with a host of ethic issues. I've been on board, not now because it's political season, not because Ed Koch has created this manifesto, but because Pedro Espada believes deeply in reform, and I have signed on long ago when I began my career in politics.
All right, I stand corrected if you signed on to that pledge. One thing about the taxes that the legislature passed and didn't pass in this budget. Did you support the hike in the tax on clothing under $110? And did you oppose the hike in the tax on sugary drinks?
Yes to both. I oppose the clothing tax and I oppose the tax on sugary drinks.
You oppose both?
Yes, I did. But the fact of the matter is that we had difficult options, and this is what makes for a mature, experienced statesman to go to Albany and make decisions on behalf of the people. The choices were not really pretty and good. They had to deal with whether or not we would cut deeply into education, into health care, into housing, into our ability to create jobs. And so, yes, we had a temporary tax on clothing, which I didn't approve of, but I voted for it because in the overall scheme of things, we have to balance our options and be clear about our priorities. And if we were to come through with the free Metro card, as we did, if we were to come through with $25 million to create small business opportunities, particularly in minority and women-owned business opportunities in our districts, and many, many other things, we had to weigh and balance out our priorities, and that's what we did.
So
I did not favor any particular tax that would be regressive and would disproportionately hurt poor and working-class people.
Is that how you consider the sugary soda tax? Because under what got passed, one could say that the legislature raised taxes on children's shoes, but did that instead of raising them on their diabetes-causing poisons?
You know, the taxes that I favor were taxes on the people that make over $1 million a year. I wanted to visit the lower tax brackets of working families to give them a tax break. Again, this was not the season to do that. We're revenue-starved. And we had to come up with the revenue. You heard all year long how we were in a cash strapped situation where we couldn't pay our bills. And so that was the focus, and we met our burden by erasing $9 billion deficit without borrowing, as was proposed by our lieutenant governor and supported by many people throughout the state. We met our burden.
Before you go, you've refused to debate your two challengers. It's a free country, but is that the democracy that people deserve?
What I'm doing is going to every street corner, every church, every opportunity. Last night I was with the NAACP lifelong member that I am. I'm going everywhere speaking directly to the people that I represent. Those are the people that need to hear from their state majority leader, and that's what I'm doing. I am not interested in debating people who have no record, who have nothing but a negative platform for our community. Let them spread their venom on their own. I'm being productive, and I'm talking to the people that I represent.
And your main opponent, Gustavo Rivera, says in order for Albany to change, Pedro Espada has to go. Given your position of power, is that not true?
The fact of the matter is that this first historic opportunity as majority leader from the Bronx, from the Latino community, will not surrender our historic first to someone that's being leased out by outside millionaires that have invaded our community. Mr. Rivera has never created a job in his life. The only jobs that he has had have been by a political appointment. And so people are clear that this is an unknown that's supported by outsiders out of a vendetta born out of the June 8th reform period. People are not stupid. They know my record. They'll support me, and I'll be back in Albany to deal with the real needs of New Yorkers, not just in my district, but 19.5 million people throughout the state. We look forward to a progressive, substantive leadership.
State Senator Pedro Espada from the 33rd District in the Northwest Bronx, running for renomination in the Democratic primary on September 14th. We heard earlier from his main challenger, Gustavo Rivera. Mr. Espada, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Be well.
And in just a minute, we will hear from the other challenger in that race, Dan Paternak. By the way, in case you're interested, I'll be talking politics on television tonight as a guest on the New York One Reporters Roundtable. That's about 7:30 and 10:30 tonight on New York One. And next week, I will host a live debate in the green space with the five Democrats hoping to be the next New York State Attorney General. And we've got some free tickets for the public, but you have to RSVP at WNYC.org/thegreenspace. Everyone else should tune in next Wednesday morning at 11 on WNYC, or you can watch a live webcast at that time on WNYC.org. But if you're interested in being in the audience for the Attorney General primary debate and see the five candidates live, Brodsky, Coffey, DiNallo, Rice, and Schneiderman, go to WNYC.org/thegreenspace to reserve your free tickets. Okay, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We do have that final candidate running against Pedro Espada coming up for a few minutes, and then we will finish out the hour on this last day before the putative end of summer, before Labor Day weekend, with a Name That Summer call-in. You can post your names for the summer. You know, 2010, it's not the summer of Sam. Thank goodness. It's not the summer of love, I wouldn't think. Obama wanted it to be recovery summer. I don't think it's quite that. So what would you name the summer of 2010? You can go to our website right now and put it on our page for that at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and in a few minutes we'll take you on the air with your names for the summer of 2010. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Name the summer of 2010. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Get those names of the summer 2010 in on our website. We have the summer of wine. HJS wrote, shut up already, just get the job done. It's been the summer of wine. So name that summer on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or call up 212-433-WNYC with the summer of what for the summer of 2010, 212-433-9692. But before we spoke to Gustavo Rivera and Pedro Espada, I mentioned that the third candidate in that race, Dan Paternak, had been invited by us via a few emails, but he hadn't gotten back to accept the invitation. Well, he called in just during the Espada interview and said, sorry, I don't check my emails, but here I am. I heard you were doing this. So we're going to give him a few minutes in the name of equal time and fairness. So Dan Paternak, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Okay, thank you. So you are considered kind of the third candidate in this race because a lot of the endorsements that are coalescing against Pedro Espada are going to Mr. Rivera. So who's endorsing you, and why should people consider you a better alternative?
Okay, one, I don't consider myself the third candidate or along those lines. I believe we have three candidates in this race, three candidates for the voters to look at, three options for the voters. As far as all the other hype, I think it's just more of a media blitz. And along the like, I believe that the power is in the voters' hands. The voters have three choices. Endorsements. I don't have any of those political unit endorsements.
Right. Well, just for example, the Daily News and mm-hmm. El Diario La Prensa both came out in this race yesterday and both vociferously against Espada and both for Gustavo Rivera.
It's interesting, but again, from my perspective, it doesn't matter. I'm not looking at those endorsements. And the voters are going to look at three individuals. They're going to look at three people. They're going to look at myself and the other two candidates, and the voters are going to make a decision.
Okay, why you?
Why me? Okay. For one, I am the person who is from this community. My family has been in this community for more than 60 years. I was born and raised in this community. I went to the local schools in this community. I have more roots than either one of the candidates. Both candidates are both outsiders. They don't have roots here. That's one. And I think it's a very strong qualification because I can connect with the people in this community.
Do you have policy differences?
I think some of the differences you'd have to go one by one if you'd like to pick a policy and go through it. I can tell you. I mean, I debated with Gustavo on Monday night, which is available on the Internet. I think you'll see similarities in the fact that we're all Democrats. So a lot of policies might be similar, but there will be differences.
Job creation? Could you do a better job than the other guys?
Yes, because I'm going to look more at a local level. And I'm going to look to see, because I know the community down here, and I know what we need. So I'm going to be looking more locally. I believe all politics is local. And I think that's the difference between me and the other two candidates. I don't think they're looking locally. That's exactly where I'm going to start, and that's where I'm going to look.
How would you clean up Albany, since that's such a big topic this year?
As I've stated before, I think Albany, the problem with Albany is that you have a bad chemistry of people up there. I think the personalities just do not mix. I think you'll find a lot of elected officials who are in Albany for themselves. They have their own agenda, or they have a political agenda from different political units and different lobbying groups. I go in there alone. My agenda is a community agenda. It's basically there to fight for the people. That's why I'm there. And I've told everyone this. If I'm elected, I'm going to voice my opinion of what's best for the community and what's best for the people. And if I don't get reelected, then I'm not going to cry about it. I'm going to leave it to the people. And if I don't get reelected, it's okay because I go back to practicing law. I love the law, which is another reason why I'm trying to be a legislator. I have that experience.
What kind of practice do you have?
I'm a solo practitioner. It's a general practice. It's actually located in the community, in Kingsbridge.
Again, to forgive me for citing polls, which I don't usually like to do, but mm-hmm. The Daily News on August 24th reported on a poll that showed Espada with 30%, Rivera with 20%, and you with 8% of the vote. And so the question becomes, if people are wanting to get rid of Pedro Espada, do they risk dividing the opposition by going with you rather than Rivera?
Well, let's go back a second. I know what poll they're talking about. That poll was created by Rivera's people, and it was created for Rivera. And it was created not for anything else but for marketing purposes. The way I look at it is this. Rivera does not have a base here because he's really not from this community. So the only thing that this camp is doing is going around and spreading a spoiler routine. I know looking at the number of enrolled Democrats that are in this district, that if the voters come out, I can win. I know my community is a big enough base where if they vote for me, we will win and we will take out Espada. That poll I don't give any credence to, and I don't give credence because I know statistics, because I studied them in college, and I know how polls are made. You can make a question sound any way you want to get a result. I know that from being an attorney.
Take our last minute and say anything you want.
Well, thank you for this opportunity to speak to your listeners. I actually found out because one of your listeners called in and said, hey, the candidates are on. I want the public to know this. I'm a candidate with roots in the community. Born and raised in the Bronx, I went to PS95, JHS 143, and Fordham Prep. I'm for this community. I love this community. My law practice is here in this community. I serve on the local community board because I like volunteering and I like doing things for my community. The voters need to come out. If the voters come out, all of the hype, all of the nonsense will go away. I know if you vote for me, we will win. The whole Maine Challenger thing is nothing but hype. Please vote your heart. Vote for the best candidate, not for a simple alternative. Vote with your heart. That's what I say.
Dan Paternak running against Pedro Espada and Gustavo Rivera in the 33rd State Senate District in the Northwest Bronx. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And after a break, we will finish up the week and bring it into the Labor Day weekend with your names for the summer of 2010. It's not the summer of Sam, thank goodness. Definitely wasn't the summer of love. The president wanted it to be recovery summer. Not quite. So how would you name the summer of 2010? The summer of what? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692.